Meandering in the margins of medicine, it's the Shortcoat Podcast.
Weird news,
fresh views,
helpful clues and interviews.
By students, for students.
Subscribe to our weekly show at theshortcoat.com.
Welcome back to the Shortcoat Podcast. Thanks for being with us, listeners. Or listener.
Hopefully not.
I don't know. I'm Dave Etler. With me today, Amy Young.
Hello.
Corbin Weaver.
Hello.
Casey McCleary.
I have sound-induced hearing loss from these headphones.
I'm sorry. And new. And Dylan Todd.
Hi there.
Hey, we're looking for a new intern. Because Corey's going to leave us eventually. Corey, come over here. Closer, dude. He's like, oh, crap. I want to do an impromptu commercial with me for your job. All right?
You have one printed out?
No.
That he's supposed to read?
No. So, Corey, what are the benefits? What are the benefits of being on the team?
Well, it's sort of like building up your immunity.
Ouch!
You know, like, they make fun of you a lot, so it helps you in the real world. You become tougher.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a lot stronger now.
That's a good point. Repeated exposure to medical school, the horrors of medical school.
Yes, definitely.
That's always useful for building up your, I don't know, your T cells.
T-cells, it's antibody.
What do you do on the show?
What do I do?
Yeah.
Besides sit here and look pretty, I edit the podcast.
He looks great on the podcast.
And how. Dave sends me the link to the show, and I edit it.
Uh-huh.
And then I send it back to him, and we...
Did you know how to do that before you...
No, I did not.
Oh, look at that.
And then I look up stories for the show.
Yeah, you
Dave
do.
And I share them on, we have a Slack account with the med students
here.
You
don't have to get into the details, man. Jesus.
But you asked.
You're trying, Dave.
You have to work with that.
How many hours a week do you think? Like, really, how many hours a week? I'm not paying you. So don't need to, like,
share money.
You don't need to.
Ew, what?
Trident layers.
Oh, my goodness.
Like 5 hours
All right.
of actual... sitting down and doing your work, and if you count looking up stories and stuff, which I do, you know, my RSS and news feeds.
Yes, you do. Yeah,
on my own time. Mm-hmm. Anything interesting pertinent towards the show? Mm-hmm.
Good. Do we need? Can you create a jingle for this commercial?
Like,
let's do it.
Neighbor.
Yeah, like that.
Dave Etler's there.
Perfect. It's a little bit of a theft.
No copyright.
A little theft issue there that we like to avoid here on the Shortcoat Podcast. But so if you're interested, just give me an email. David-Etler@uiowa.edu. That's totally unwise what I just did. But look, that's how much I want. That's how much I need your help.
They can find that.
Yeah,
on
they can find it
the
in
internet.
Way.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Or you can.
Haven't been spotted yet.
Or you can email theshortcoats@gmail.com. Any number of ways to get in touch with me about this, especially if you're in Iowa. This is for Iowa students. I know it's a little bit hyper local, but what are you going to do? You have to be sort of nearby. Yeah. So. Yeah.
Unless you're willing to commute.
Yeah.
We do not reimburse for travel costs.
Yeah, we do not. Casey.
What?
You look a little sad. A little downtrodden.
Still.
A little downtrodden.
Already. The 2-week issue. Starting off in clinics in a bunch of 2-weekers is really weird because most of your rotations are going to be 4 or even 6 weeks, and a lot of the times you'll have a couple of the same residents, or at least you'll be in the same unit with some of the same people. Mm. And I think it gives you a little more time to get acclimated to what the climate in that particular unit is like. But there's a bunch of 2-week rotations that everybody has to do at some point during their thing. But I had 4 of them stacked right in a row. So I had like 2 weeks in radiology, 2 weeks in derm, 2 weeks in ophthalmology, 2 weeks in otolaryngology. And like, it was very disorienting. And you don't have time to get to know anybody or anything about, like, the specialties, and by the time you kind of figure out what's going on, it's already time for you to move on. So, like, at least, like, no one, at least in the ones that I was in, it seems like nobody wants to give you any responsibility or, like, let you help with anything. Because, like, before, they were like, you know, all the older students would tell us, you know, just ask and see what you can help with and be really enthusiastic. So I was doing that, and then everyone was like, no, just don't worry about it. No, just don't worry about it. And, like, I think they thought that they were doing me a favor.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, by, like, oh, don't work too hard. And probably also doing themselves a favor, because, like, if you have to teach somebody to do something, it's more work for you.
Yeah.
But it's less work for you down the line, but it's not less work if that person's immediately going to leave and you have to teach another person. So, I don't know. I found that, like, very stressful and very kind of disempowering. Like, I felt like it was going to be 2.5 years of shadowing, and that was really stressful. I was like, I don't want to shadow for 2.5 years and pretend like I'm actually interested in all these things that I'm not interested in.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you also? I've heard also that. Well, I got the impression. So we had this conversation basically a week ago.
Yeah.
And I got the impression that you are also, during your 2 weekers, feeling like things were very illogical and sort of poorly conceived. But I wasn't really sure what aspects you were.
I mean,
of.
Small things like the not wanting to teach people because they're immediately going to leave, but that means that I can't help do anything.
Oh, okay.
You know, like, I will take some work off your shoulders, but only if you let me. So I felt very, like, useless, and I felt like I was wasting a lot of time floating around. The thing that I had the most trouble with last week was actually how my other classmates were behaving with regards to things like evaluations. You have to get letters from your residents, and, like, they were making it seem like the only way to get through medical school was to do this little dance where you pretend like nothing bothers you and then, like, beg for good evaluations, basically. This turned into this huge existential crisis, and I was questioning if I could even survive in medicine, because it was bad. I, like, walked in here in tears. It was
bad. You were very upset.
I made it all the way down the slope from I don't even know if I can survive in medicine because what is this system and I can't be genuine to myself or point out problems when I think I see them.
Yeah.
This is what happens when I get left alone with my brain. I made it all the way down to the slope to society is evil and bad for the environment, and we should all go live in the woods in small tribes and disband our society because it's all unethical and there's no way to live ethically consistently.
I think some of the events that happen, students think that if they speak up, something negative will happen to them, but that's not necessarily true.
Yeah, I kind of want to.
Yeah.
Kind of want to go with that because
I think it depends on the med school. Here, at least, like, I talked to the residents, noticed that I was, like, riding the struggle bus, that I had been run over by the struggle bus, and the struggle bus was dragging me behind it.
maybe backed over you a few times.
It kept making stops and backing it. protracted metaphor.
Yeah, just keep going with that.
But I talked to some of the residents, and they said that they think, at least at University of Iowa, there are a lot of ways to, like, get around that kind of thing, and that it's not actually going to affect your letter, or you get to choose your own evaluations, like, who's evaluating you. So if you really didn't get along with somebody, or if you think you made a bad impression on, like, this one clerkship director, you just don't have them be one of your evaluations. You find someone else who's going to do a good evaluation. And, like, that made me feel so much better.
And I think that
just that I could survive it. And I don't know if that's the case at all med schools, but I think you're right. I think there's still that conception.
I think there's,
you can't.
I think at least from what the powers that be have said, they also kind of want to hear about these cases of.
They do.
And they need to hear these cases of, you know, where people feel that they've been abused. Because if they don't hear about it, they're not going to be able to do anything about it.
Yeah.
That's what I was totally thinking is that, you know, if you're silent about stuff like that, you know,
It's just going to keep happening.
Yeah, it's
to
just
going to
get. It's just going to happen again to somebody else. And it's that's such a hard thing to take on that responsibility. You know what I'm saying?
It really puts a target on your back.
It feels like it does. I'm not sure that it really does. But
even if, like here, even if people actually are pretty open to hearing about problems that people are having, it feels like a target.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, we're like at the bottom of the totem pole, so that kind of puts us as like the vulnerable population.
Yeah.
And I'm going back into clinic in April, and I haven't finished
med school.
You're
loving this story.
Well, no. So like mentally in my head, I've been like coming up with game plans for when I have like a horrible experience or a horrible day and I'm totally demoralized and I'm like, okay, maybe I could call this person or I could go to this person's office. And I also keep track of like where restrooms are in the hospital so I can like run in for crying. Oh, and I was like, this is a good coping mechanism. And then I'm just like it's pathetic that I have to do this.
Yeah, but
like,
you know what?
Because I know like something's gonna happen. Somebody is gonna, you know, some attending is just gonna have a bad day and yell at me or something, and I'll just feel totally alone, and I won't feel like I have the support structure that I've had during my PhD years.
Yeah.
And I'm just gonna need to find a broom closet.
I think this is a great plan, and not just because you might get yelled at, but because, you know, the clerkships can be really intense and more intense sometimes than the first 2 years that you guys experience. I mean, the first 2 years are very intense because you're working really hard. You're just pounding the books. Your tests. You might fail a test. Like God only knows. But
it's a different kind of.
It's
intense.
A different kind of. Yeah, exactly.
Or something really upsetting happens with a patient.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There are things that can happen, and I like your approach of, I mean, because you're like me. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading into this.
Maybe I shouldn't have publicly announced that I have this, like...
No,
this is great. Like, this is great because I feel like it's, and I may be reading into this a little bit, but you are like me, a pessimist. Follow me here.
I've learned from experience.
She's a realist.
Kind of an elder.
Yeah. Well, see, what I should have said was, I am a realist.
Yeah.
In that I know shit's gonna happen, and one of my focuses is on making sure that when it does, I have a place to hide.
Now, see, I think that's a good plan because as sort of an idealist, I did not. And I started crying in front of my resident, so...
Well, that's also... I mean, it worked out.
I did work out, thank God. It was a nice resident, but...
Yeah.
he looks terrified.
Yeah.
He looked terrified. Do you need to go home? Like, right. Do you need to take the afternoon? Like, you can...
I've gotten used to it.
Be okay.
Be okay.
Don't be cry.
don't be cry.
I've sort of gotten used to it in my,
oh my God,
in my position.
So
over here. I don't know what it is. I like to think that it's my, you know, sort of warm, giving, nurturing personality that
you don't,
occasionally
have any power over us. So you're non-threatening.
Yeah, I think that's probably more it. Where they come in and cry.
I'm more worried about being transformed into a more callous and indifferent person.
Yeah.
And medical education, I mean, there's no denying
I was very scared
that medical education that. Does that.
Because I've seen people after their third and fourth year of medical school, and they are different.
Yeah, and it's well documented
yeah.
that as you proceed through med ed, you lose, not that idealism, but that compassion, that at least externally, you lose that that humanistic quality that made you maybe a good applicant. You have to fight to keep it.
Yeah.
I think some of the changes are positive, some of them are negative. I think it's just kind of a package. Yeah. But yeah.
You do have to be able to be a little disconnected, like if you're doing surgery.
Well, let's call it,
for example.
Or anything, oncology, or, you have to, like,
yeah, like,
yeah, because otherwise you'd be
sick.
A wreck.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It could be a wreck.
It's a fine line to walk. And I think that's what I was afraid. I was like, well, I either have to like start this process of losing my humanity or quit medicine. Like, I didn't feel like I had any option.
I think I'm more impatient.
And I don't think that's totally the case, but that was what I felt like.
And I honestly think that if we did a better job in medicine of taking care of ourselves, like our own, you would see less like losing of the compassion throughout the medical education system. Because I mean, I've been down before, and you know, at that point, do I care about other people a ton?
It's really hard.
So if you're actually suffering from depression or whatever, how do you have that compassion for your patient? You might.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like people who have depression can't feel compassion for other people. I don't want to, but you know, it's just harder if you're just trying to survive your day.
Yeah.
You know, it's harder.
Do you? So,
having your eyes open takes all your energy when you're depressed.
Yeah.
You know, some of this sort of comes to me, talks about the thing, you know, I think about the hierarchical nature of medicine. And you were saying that you know, well, you know, you're a low person on the totem pole, and that makes you feel like, you know, you're at risk.
Mm-hmm.
Medical education, it's full of gatekeepers. You know, like, there are people who, you know, you depend upon to give you a good evaluation, because if you get a bad evaluation, or actually more to the point, if you get multiple bad evaluations, then you're, that could be trouble. One bad evaluation is not going to kill you, but you know, three bad evaluations is, you know, now you're
looking sketchy.
You're edging into sketchland, at least as far as your medical student performance evaluation. Yeah.
And that was something that was kind of rough.
Is that your threshold for?
I don't know that I have a number, but I have, you know, for instance, if you got three, the way I think about it, I think, is if you get, you know, say two in one clerkship and all the other clerkships were okay, that might be okay. If you got two in one, if you got one in one clerkship and one in another clerkship and they were separated by some time, that makes me start to think.
Yeah.
Mm. So, and so on and so forth. But I don't know that I have an algorithm.
What does it mean to have a bad evaluation?
So,
like, I got one.
Oh.
What was your, do you mind?
Well, I've only done one clerkship, so I have one bad evaluation.
Oh, no.
Nice.
Like, are we talking about?
Hey, that's 100%.
I mean, I passed, but it said something along the lines of that I have a prejudice against lower income patients or something.
Whoa.
Like that. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oof.
Do you?
How would you
evaluate yourself?
When I saw it, I was just so burnt out because I just done step one and then I did this clerkship and I was just like, whatever. But I think that my enthusiasm for complex medical cases came off as like seeing, because if you haven't had medical care in a long time because you're uninsured, you might have more complex medical conditions. And I think that my enthusiasm to be assigned the more complicated cases somehow came off as me treating them like maybe like objectifying them or something, and not seeing them as real people.
That's very interesting.
So I don't know.
You should just be like,
that's just what happened. And
you should just have said, like, you should have done the Donald Trump thing. Like, poor people love me. They love me. I'm huge with poor people.
Huge.
That's very interesting.
I think it was just a misperception of motives or whatever.
That's one thing that's hard about people, you know, making these evaluations, if you will, because it's just like, if you just have a personality that doesn't click with someone, it just is what it is.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, I read it and I just thought it was so ridiculous and so not me that I just didn't care. Maybe I should have got followed up on it. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's
that
hard.
Was like 5 years ago.
I know, I was going to say, it's hard.
Might be a little late.
Like, hey, remember me?
I really do. I don't have a problem with
poor
people.
Poor people.
You're going to be like, who are you?
Just call them up and say, hey,
I'm huge with poor people, and then hang up.
Well, you know, the other thing I was thinking about in the week following our discussion is that, you know, our society in general officially celebrates the differences among people. Okay?
Technically.
That's what I'm saying. But unofficially condemns them.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, oh, you know, we love people of color and we love gay people and we love this, that, and the other thing. But really, when it comes down to it, I feel like a majority of the population would rather you just be like them.
We love small-scale diversity because it still feels safe, you know, like, oh, we love diversity in that we have 10 different types of Protestants here, not we love diversity in that we have 10 actually different religions here.
Yeah.
Hey, I have a complaint on the UIHC policy, or a question. So I found out that if you're a UIHC employee, you can't have a tattoo showing.
Okay.
And I'm in the market for getting a tattoo, and I feel like saying you can't have a tattoo showing is kind of like an archaic kind of social precedent.
You know what's funny is I feel like you've mentioned your tattoo thing to me before.
I've been thinking about it. It's the only fun thing I can do right now. It's like writing a paper, defense talk, thesis, dissertation, tattoo.
Your life.
Yeah, we don't want tattoos to be taboo. We wouldn't want that.
Tattoo are you considering and where?
On my forearm, and I actually commissioned one of my friends from undergrad to design it for me, so we're kind of working on that together. Right.
Well, I agree with you, because I've been thinking about doing the same thing, but it's like, it's totally ridiculous, because the idea is that it wouldn't, that, you know.
It's professional.
Yeah, professional, or getting at the point that it would offend someone. And I would say it's not your right to be offended by my tattoo. Like,
unless it's actually offensive.
Unless it's actually offensive.
Right, like
you know, like...
Look, I have
the solution. A tattoo in and of itself is not offensive.
Yes, I have the solution, though. Get the tattoo on your forearm and then cover it up with, like, leather-spiked gauntlet thing.
So here's the thing, though.
Casey could probably make you one.
That sounds reasonable.
I couldn't just...
I mean, I could.
Yeah.
I couldn't just, you know, say, oh, I'm going to get a tattoo and then go get it, right? So I started researching, like, well, how is the ink made and regulated in the U.S.? Oh, it's not regulated by the FDA. Well, how do I know it's actually in it? Oh, okay. The EU posts things online about all their screens they do on imports. And then I emailed a guy that makes this tattoo ink that...
God, you're
and then, I, and then he was like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, I never sent anything to the EU for testing. And then I was like, oh, well, you tried to import it, but they blocked it because the PHA levels were too high. P.S. New Zealand just did a heavy metal screen in your ink. Here's the PDF. And I know he's just sitting there like, this is what happens when when tattoos go mainstream.
Yeah.
Like, I get all these people, and he just wrote to me, he's like, I know it's safe because I use it myself, and I wouldn't use it if, and that, no. I mean, it's a beautiful, it's like a really cool culture, like
that's
the tattoo
science
culture.
Right there.
It's like
are your tattoos BPA free?
Are they vegan?
That's a thing! That's a thing! Did you know that?
No!
Yeah,
I'm super not surprised,
like,
though.
The glycerin goes into part of the solution, and they want it to be, like, animal-free.
Glycerin.
Yeah, so I just worried about... My skin is super sensitive, and if anybody's going to have, like, immunological reaction to something, it would be me. Sorry.
Well, I
Oh, P.S.
Yeah.
When I was over in the infusion suite last month, I saw a nurse with really cute little tattoos on her fingers and hands. They weren't covered up.
How unprofessional.
And I was not offended.
Maybe it's a rule that exists but isn't enforced.
Yeah.
I hate those.
I'm not sure.
I don't know.
They stress me out because then I want to break them because they're usually stupid rules that nobody quite wants to take off the book.
I know of another person who has one in a... Public. This looks a bit like Sharpie, though, so it's probably...
Yeah, get a low-quality tattoo that doesn't look like it can be an actual tattoo.
That could be a strategy.
So, like, people who want to say they have a tattoo, but they're kind of afraid to actually get one, they'll get, like, a dot.
Got it.
Oh.
I have another idea.
I'm sorry.
I got it. You should get a tattoo.
Oh, I thought you were trying to get me to stop talking about tattoos.
No, I have to talk about this all day long.
Stop. We gotta move on to something else.
Get a tattoo with UV ink.
Oh. Those are cool. No, those actually can be more dangerous.
Yeah, but they don't age well
because the, like, yeah, I've read all the, yeah.
You can get the UIHC policies.
I am like an ex.
I do not have any public tattoos.
It's a metaphor because they don't age well.
I am a tattoo expert and I haven't gotten one yet. And I even went to see a tattoo artist in St. Paul that I looked up his work and I like went to see him and we talked and he's like, you know, why don't you just like go talk to a dermatologist? And when you feel, we all need to feel good about this decision. Mm. So go see your dermatologist. And I wanted to be like, under my breath, I was like, well, like in a year I'll be a doctor. So I don't really. And my husband's like, shut up, Amy.
It's like a team-based approach. It's like, yes, we have all the specialists.
No, they're great.
We're gonna coordinate your tattoo care.
So I'm so excited. And I was like, you know, I emailed and I have a consult set up with this guy. And he's like, you know, you can just come in whenever you want. And I was like, oh, right. And so then we left, and I was like, I didn't get a tattoo yet, but I was like, that's so exciting. And I asked my husband, I was like, does this mean, like, he's my tattoo artist now? Like, I have a guy?
Is it Facebook official?
No.
This is like Tarzan when worlds collide, you know? This is beautiful.
You know, I do see...
I am so nerdy.
Yeah, it's okay.
It's good to be informed.
It's okay. Yeah. This sounds exactly like something my wife would do. She would do a lot of research and a lot of...
It does limit your ability to travel to Japan, if that's what you want to do.
What? Really?
Because all the mobsters in Japan have tattoos.
Oh, yeah, you'd be like Yakuza.
Yeah, you're a Yakuza.
Just keep it covered.
But, like, if you go to a bathhouse...
But Lady Gaga got a tattoo when she was in Tokyo.
I think Lady Gaga would be refused from some bathhouses if she...
I'm also thinking...
What are you going to do in a bathhouse in Japan?
I'm also thinking, and no offense, but I'm not sure that you have the cachet of Lady Gaga.
A what?
I'm not sure that you have the sort of social standing, the cachet of Lady...
Okay, I don't even know what cachet is, but I guess I...
Lady Gaga.
You underestimate me, all right?
All right, fair enough.
I am gonna...
She's gonna show up tomorrow in a suit made of meat, and it's your fault.
She's gonna do a musical tribute to The Sound of Music, and everyone will fall in love with Amy.
Well, getting back to the...
Yeah.
Topic at hand.
Way to derail.
I'm really sorry.
I could spend a whole day on Amy's tattoos, but...
that I don't have.
That you don't, yes. The tattoo that you've been thinking about for ages. But I think when... You know, one of the things I have noticed is that when... You know, getting back to the hierarchical nature of medicine and all that kind of stuff, one of the things I have seen things go awry is when one is perceived as... A pain in the ass.
Mm. Yeah.
Or as rebellious, or not accepting of the wonderful stores of knowledge that your superiors have to bestow upon you. That sort of thing. And that can actually, I've seen that be a little damaging. Even when...
I'm pretty worried about that.
Even when it wasn't intended. You know, like, it's not like, in the cases I can think of, where they were intending to question everything that they were being given, that was bestowed upon them. I think that in the vast majority of those cases, they were actually trying to learn. Mm-hmm. But they were doing it in a way that was perceived as being, you know, it's basically...
Back-sass.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Or, I think that's what I'm going for.
Yeah.
And that's heartbreaking for me when I look at their evaluation and I know that person and I'm like, that's not who that person is. But you get so little time to get to know your evaluators and
it's all first impressions. Sometimes you'll have like one interaction with someone. Like I get pretty bad stage fright. So a lot of times, rounding is a nightmare? I hate rounding. Because it's like, okay, here's this person you've never met. They're very intimidating. They're like you know, 50, 60 years old that have done this forever.
Yeah.
And then you're presenting to them and you completely screw it up.
And you know, you sound like an idiot.
Then, and then guess what? When you get your evaluation, just like, student is not good at presenting.
And
I'm like,
thanks. And the thing about it is, like, they're asking me questions like, well, what medications were they on before they were admitted? I didn't know the answer, but he did because he had read the chart before.
It's a trap.
It's so. Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, I guess that's his job, is to say, you know, this is something that you needed to think about next time. Those comments don't haunt you.
No, I know. But I guess my point, you should treat the third and fourth years of your medical education as basically just a hazing experience.
But it shouldn't be like that. I'm going to be one of those pain in the asses because it shouldn't be like that.
You can't escape from it.
I have a proposal.
What's that?
So next spring, in like a year, I could come visit you again and we can read through all the reviews that I've gotten over the course of last year.
Oh, I would kill to do that.
Good and bad. We'll just put it all out there.
Are you serious?
Sure.
We'll see how you feel in a year.
See how
don't you already get
a picture of me is all put together by after a year of rotations.
I would love to do that as an experiment in a safe place, accompanied by say 500 of your friends from the internet.
It could be a humanities project.
And a broom closet nearby.
Could yeah. be my humanities project. Who is this fourth year medicine?
But you know what? I want to point out also that I think medicine needs those people who are
quirky,
counterculturalist, pains in the ass. I mean, don't you think that?
So yeah, actually, you're actually just getting to, this gets to the, what I was just thinking is, I think the hard thing about this is you're kind of asked to be all things, because you're asked to be like compliant and listen to my like elder and stuff
and
like that.
Stay out of the way.
And stay out of the way. But they're also like, you need to take initiative and you need to like be a rogue God, and you need to like, you know, do all these things. It's like, so I can either be your like good little student or I can be like a active learner.
It's almost like a Zen riddle. A Zen master has presented you with a question that literally has no answer. You know, like before your father and mother was born, what was your original face? What? And you're just like, I have no idea what that means. So because you can't possibly fit this role, I think then you have to really think about, like, you know, what is my nature? Who am I?
Yeah.
And maybe that's one of the reasons why people seem different after medical school. Because they've been transformed, maybe not in a good way, not in a Zen way, but
You do need to know something about who, you're right. I think you do need to know something about who you are going in to your, at least to your clinical rotations. Because I think a lot of people,
most students you have to know who,
and if you're not one of those people,
you don't get here if you're not a little bit of a pleaser. Yeah.
But if you're not one of those people who, you know, feels the need to be like
my evaluations are going to be horrible.
Mine too,
because I am so beyond pleasing right now.
I can't wait.
I have forgotten all medical knowledge.
Give her a high five.
Sorry.
No, I don't want your high five anymore.
So I'm sitting here with my hand in the air. I'm the worst possible combination. Because I don't know anything, but I do know that you should not treat me a certain way.
Oh, golly.
That's not going to work. That's not going to work.
Can I come to your evaluation?
Fun to hear about later. Yeah. But like to your point, Dave, I think medicine does need those people. And sometimes those people, the disruptors, if you will, can be very very effective, but like more often than not, they get shattered down.
Yeah, well, that's,
you know,
that's what I'm saying about that whole diversity being like important, at least when we talk out loud about it. But you know, when push comes to shove,
I always say it's proportion. Like, it kind of goes back to privilege too. I think like you can be a disruptor if you're like privileged in other ways. Like you're a white upper class male who can like bro out with people. Yeah. You're like, I can be kind of an asshole because, you know, I'm going to get away with it, but
yeah,
and people are going to give me the benefit of the doubt. But
oh, the boys club exists.
So
doesn't some of this stuff kind of just like stratify out by specialty? So maybe your personality type clicks better with like internists or general surgeons, and
I think that's how a lot of people choose their specialty, is by the they feel like they belong in that particular group of people.
You know, one of the things you talked about last week, or at least I felt you were talking about, was what is the point of these 2 weekers? Like, literally,
Especially,
you spend 2 weeks in these like things where, but in these places where you're not going to end up using this information. Mm-hmm. Do you still feel that way, or was that just a comment in the moment where?
A little bit more for some of them than others. Like when I got to do otology was more relevant to. I have a little bit of a problem too because I already know what I want to do. So I'm spending a bunch of time jumping through these hoops so I can get my, like, general medical degree and go do what I actually want to do. Yeah. And, I'm really getting sick of jumping through hoops. Well, it gets really old really fast.
Well, you had 4 weeks. I think it's unusual to be in your situation where you had 4 weeks right up front. But
I don't know, derm. Like, I will use derm twice in my life, probably.
Because you're going...
And it's like when I have a kid who has a mole... Yeah. Is going to be one of it, you know, like...
Because you want to go into... Or maybe you don't want to say.
No, I want to go into neurology and or psychiatry.
Okay, so...
Preferably the
crossover. If you were family medicine, derm might be more relevant, but...
Yeah. Right, but I'm not, and I know I'm not going to be, and, like, that puts me in a kind of a unique position because most people are not that certain...
I started...
Before they've even been in clinics, and I don't want to hear about how I'm going to change my mind because I'm not, because this is the reason that I came to medical school.
I think you're unusual, though.
I am unusual.
In many ways, but you're unusual.
I can't argue with that.
But, so I asked around today, various people, and I didn't get to ask anybody important. I just asked people like me. Like, what is the point? Like, why these particular... Actually, my big question was, why these particular... specialties.
That is weird.
Because, and so my initial thought was these are high yield. The ones that they've picked are high yield. But it fell down once I thought of anesthesia.
Yep.
You know, like, yes, anesthesia is extremely important, you know, but, you know, if I'm going to go into family medicine, I'm never going to call an anesthesia. I'm never going to refer my patient to an anesthesiologist.
But you might need to know the interaction between your patient's medical conditions and risk factors for surgery.
You'd still want to be able to like educate your patients on like general anesthesia and stuff like that.
But isn't that possible to do without
general exposure? Like some people aren't going to know that they really like something until they go and try it. Yeah.
I think that's the main reason why they exist, the selective, and that's why they're even called probably, you know, selectives, you know,
like, which is an interesting turn of phrase considering that only you can pick and choose from like seven of them.
Yeah.
And you have to do six.
What's the difference between
selective?
What's the difference between a selective and an elective? What's the S mean?
I think you have to do six of these seven. I don't know if that's the right
so
six
like,
of these seven.
It is
six selective.
I don't know. I think they were struggling for a term.
They're electives, but you have to select from a very set number of electives.
And then there are electives like endocrinology, like which. You know, this is the other way
around. I'm not taking any electives then.
This is where the yield argument fell down too. Is like, well, wouldn't endocrinology be like super useful to a lot of people? Yeah, it might be. So then that led me to ask, well, is it just logistics? Because there is no, as far as I know, there's no endocrinology. Residency.
I think it comes down to kind of departmental stuff. Yeah. Like every department, they want to like be able to have medical students in their department that they can expose them to their thing.
There's fellowships in endocrinology.
There are.
There's reproductive endocrinology.
Right.
There's neuroendocrinology. There's.
Yeah. So. And part of it
do
is.
Do other schools have two-weekers like this? Maybe we could get callers from other schools.
I'm pretty sure.
I think it'd be really hard, though, to like. I mean, schools do rotations very differently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they all pretty much have it, but like as far as timing-wise, they're pretty different. So.
Because, I don't know anything about other schools' curriculums. Like, I'm just internally comparing what I think it should be.
Is it safe to say that you died from exposure
from over sure I died
Corey
let it be known
Corey please go and insert a
wah, wah, wah.
In there. Okay, well, Corbin has to go.
I have to go. Sorry.
Bye,
God,
Corbin.
God love
Bye.
You Corbin
I gotta go
Corbin.
Learn about diabetes.
God love you. Diabetes.
The sugars.
I had to recently play a YouTube video of Wilfred Brimley talking about diabetes to my children.
Is that that guy?
Yeah.
In the commercial?
Diabetes.
Why do you know his name?
Because he's from my era. You know, he was an actor during yeah, my... He was like a...
Oh, I thought it was just some guy.
No, he's a famous... When Wilford Brimley... When people like Wilford Brimley get to a certain age, they go on diabetes commercials. I mean, it's kind of the sad part.
I just don't like those catheter commercials where they're like, oh, self-lubricated catheter. Just like,
I'm sure that
in.
Would be
Is there such a thing?
Yeah, no, I know it's important and that this ad is reaching people in need, but I don't know. I just love watching all those like Bonanza and stuff like that.
TV Land? Do you watch TV Land?
Yeah, I watch a lot of TV Land. So
I grew up on TV Land.
So you're not the target demographic.
I'm not.
Yeah.
No.
Anyway, I know all about them now.
Okay. Well, look, I want to comfort you all in that if you were only just a little bit younger, maybe 10 years younger, you may have gotten...
I don't want to go back there.
You have, I am. I'm not so hot about it either, even 45. Anyway, 10 years younger, you might have avoided these two-weekers because they will have learning by brain stimulation. Did you guys read about this?
No.
You know that scene in The Matrix when Neo learns Kung Fu after having it uploaded to his brain?
Yeah, why is that the thing you choose to learn?
Well... He can eat it. He needed some kung fu.
Okay, fair enough.
I think it had Tai Chi. Just a master of moving his chi around.
Definitely more useful in his situation. So here's a quote from, this is no longer science fiction. Here's a quote from HRL Laboratories researchers. Subjects who received brain stimulation via electrode-embedded head caps improved their piloting abilities. Uh-huh. So think about this for a minute. It's possible that in the future, your pilot may learn by, your commercial aircraft pilot may accomplish some of his learning by transcranial magnetic electrical, whatever it is, stimulation.
Yeah.
They've been experimenting with sending the brain activity of commercial and military pilots to trainees, and this has had a positive effect on their ability to fly in flight sims after 4 days.
Huh. That sounds cool.
HRL is a Boeing GM.
Can we do this for
subsidiary.
Medicine?
Yeah, right.
That's what I'm thinking.
I don't want to learn it the hard way.
That's what I'm thinking. So it's according to them, it's pretty striking. There's a 33% increase in consistency in landing the plane.
Sweet.
In these simulations after only 4 days.
Sounds like a better way to learn surgery.
Yeah. So...
What does this tell us about just the nature of these? We think it's like a very precise task, but maybe there's some kind of mass action thing that you can capture with this technology that is, you know, I don't know. It's just the implications of it are very interesting.
Mm-hmm. I wonder...
Is it the mindset? Is it the attitude? You know, what is being transmitted exactly?
It's kind of this,
yeah, this... Like a placebo effect?
Well, it's... They did control for that.
Okay.
With sham stimulations and.
So the context that I'm familiar with this, I mean, I don't know if the electrodes are the exact same thing as transcranial magnetic stimulation, which is, I think, the thing that I'd heard about being used in these like military applications. But the one that I was aware of just makes you learn faster. It doesn't transmit something from someone else to you, but it makes you learn something faster. So they'll run people through like war zone simulations and, you know, do their reaction times or whatever, and then they'll blast them with this and it's like they're like way faster, they like learn way better and retain it longer or whatever.
So I think these were, I'll post the link as I usually do on the website, you can check it out, because I think it's electrical stimulation, not magnetic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that changes what you were just talking about.
No, it might
but I think they were actually sending electrical signals from the brain of an accomplished pilot to the brain of a novice pilot.
Wait, they had like their brains like...
What signals were they sending?
Electrical. I got nothing for you there. Yeah. I think there were...
There's a lot of...
Go click on the link, Amy.
There's a lot of neurons firing in the brain.
No, I think they were...
All of them.
I think they were sending This is okay. This is so we're now in the realm of Dave doesn't know what he's talking about. But
I don't think any of us do at this
but
point.
But I think what they were so my in my head was a picture of a pilot with an electrode cap on, having his electrical activity recorded as he was landing a plane, and then that information being given to via another cap to a novice pilot. Mm. Anyway, thank you for once again on the podcast. My lack of research has been shown.
No. But, I think you're doing a great job.
Oh, thank you. Yes. I think I just made that shit up. But. But
isn't that how all great science is done?
I think so.
No, they were probably like, you know what? We don't know this is going to work. Let's just try it. Sounds absurd.
We're the military. We have infinite money to spend on this kind of research.
Sounds like something Dave Etler would come up with. Let's do it. I'm joking. Sorry.
I could be making breakthroughs in science.
I wish it were that easy to get grants.
Yeah.
I'm going to do something cool.
You're a scientist of a different era.
I am a total scientist.
But that's the
scientist.
Spirit. You know, that's the spirit behind it.
Yeah, come on. Don't tell me that scientists are not out there going, you know what? I'm going to do this. I'm going to do something cool.
Scientists are boring now. You
and
guys
now
don't like
I'm
your experiments
make,
anymore.
I'm going to do something cool, and now I'm going to make up a reason why I'm going to do it.
I think it's more about yourself. Being inquisitive, actually.
You don't drop
not
things
like,
on people.
You shouldn't have, like, a set outcome. Like, I'm going to... like a. You shouldn't say I'm going to prove
no,
this.
No. I'm not saying outcome.
I'm make
saying
this happen.
I'm not saying outcome. I'm saying I want to record some brain impulses and put them into another person's brain impulse. See what happens. You know, not like I think this is going to do this.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
You think that's the right spirit?
Then this is maybe why I'm not a scientist. I don't know.
Have a good weekend. I'm done podcasting now.
Thank you for closing out the show.
Okay, thanks, bye.
Oh, man. You people.
What is this music?
This is new. Just give it a chance.
I hate change.
You do hate change. You have fought the mic change.
I did fight the mic change.
The two-week clerkships.
Yeah, just everything. Well, just like that, we're out. So thanks so much for listening to us today, listeners. If you like what you hear, go to iTunes, whether you use iTunes or not, okay? And give us a review because that helps us to grow the show, makes us feel good. As always, we're listening all over the place. Send us an email at theshortcoats@gmail.com. Hit us up on Facebook or Twitter. The show is made possible by these lovely people who are in this room with me today. And by a generous donation by Carver College of Medicine student government about 7 years ago. And the Writing and Humanities program. Our executive producer is Jason Lewis. Our interns are Corey Christensen and Dan Wu. And we're still in the market for one more, remember. Our opening music is by Dr. Vox, and our closing music is by AgriFox. Talk to you in 1 week.